Good evening. It's good to see everyone. We are going to be in Hebrews chapter 10 tonight. If you'd like to go ahead and turn your Bibles there. Hebrews chapter 10. David was kind enough to print handouts. They're on the back table. If you'd like one, you're welcome to grab one. If you want to grab one on your way out, that's fine too. If you'd like to pass one around, then that's totally fine. So as you can tell on the screen behind me, we're talking about encouragement tonight. Talking about encouragement. And while the handouts are coming around, we can kind of introduce our topic here. Encouragement is very important in the church. Of course, we think about the three works of the church, as we sometimes call it. We would refer to them as benevolence and evangelism and edification, right? So encouragement is one of the key things that we do and we focus on. We oftentimes hear people say something along the lines of, well, I want to be better at evangelism. You know, I don't feel like I'm good at it. It's not something I've ever really enjoyed or felt proficient at, but I want to get better. Sometimes we'll say that about benevolence. You know, I wish I could give more. I'm looking for opportunities to grow and contribute more to the congregation. How often do we really hear that about growing in our encouragement, right? Growing or developing in how encouraging we are to people. And what's interesting is we find five ways to improve as an encourager from Hebrews chapter 10, verses 24 to 25. And we're going to read those two verses now. Hebrews 10, 24 and 25. I'll be reading from the ESV this evening. The Hebrews writer says, "And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near." Number one, the first attribute of an encourager, that a person that wants to grow, a person who wants to develop in their encouragement, we have to be proactive. We have to be proactive. If you've ever tried to get better at anything from you know, keep following a budget every month to getting better at basketball or running or whatever the case is, it's going to require some intentionality. You're not going to get better at something by accident. It's like, oh, wow, I'm a lot better at this, and I didn't really even pay that much attention to it. It simply doesn't work that way. So we want to be better as encouragers. We want to grow. We want to develop. That's going to require some proactivity on our part. And the word here that the Hebrews writer uses for that first phrase of verse 24, let us consider how to, that word consider there is the idea of giving careful consideration, to consider closely. So let's consider, let's think about how we can stir up each other, how we can encourage each other and build each other up. Go in your Bibles to Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1. I'll give you a hint. If you took one of the handouts, the passages in bold are usually the ones that we're going to go to. We won't go to all of them, but if you'd like to go ahead and preemptively turn to the next emboldened passage, then that might be a little bit easier for you. Romans chapter 1, we're thinking about if the Lord finds us, whenever the Lord returns, will He find us being an encouragement? That's going to require some intentionality on our part. Look at what Paul says to the church at Rome in verses 11 and 12. Romans chapter 1, verses 11 and 12. Paul says, "For I long to see you," why Paul? "That I may impart to you some spiritual gift to strengthen you. That is, we may be mutually encouraged by each other's faith, both yours and mine." Paul says, "I want to come see you. I want to be there. I want to come to the church at Rome." By the way, Paul has never been there before. He's probably never met these people before. And what message does he have for them? "I want to come see you," number one. But number two, "I want to come see you so that I can encourage you and so that you can encourage me." So think about that for a second. Paul wanted to do something for one of the large purposes, at least, was to be an encouragement, to build them up, to encourage them in the faith, and to lift them up. That included being proactive on his part, something that he was doing intentionally. You see a similar idea in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 22. It was something that he thought about and something that he desired to do. Go ahead and go down to point number two, and we'll spend a little bit more time with this point. Encouragement is provocative. It is provocative. That first phrase there, let us consider how to, We're thinking about it. It's something that we do intentionally. God isn't going to find us accidentally being a good encourager. It's something that we have to decide that we are going to be a part of. But what are we considering how to do? He says, stir up one another. And that word stir up there is the idea of to provoke, to irritate, a causing of something by spurring on. Go ahead and look in 2 Peter chapter 1. 2 Peter chapter 1. Peter doesn't use the same word, but he uses a similar one. 2 Peter chapter 1, look in verse 13. Chapter 1, verse 13. Peter says, I think it right, as long as I am in this body, to do what, Peter? To stir you up by way of reminder. And that word there is translated similarly, but it's a little bit different. It carries this idea of to wake you up, to encourage you to be vigilant, to kind of keep you on your toes, as it were. Peter says, I want you to wake up. I want you to be alert. I want to rouse you. I want to make sure that you're paying attention and that you're vigilant. We'll then come forward just a little bit more and go to Revelation chapter 3. Revelation chapter 3, Jesus is speaking to the seven churches in Asia, and he's speaking specifically in this passage to the church in Sardis. Revelation chapter 3, let's look in verses 1 through 3. Revelation chapter 3, verses 1 through 3. The angel of the church in Sardis write, this is Jesus speaking, the words of him who has the seven spirits of God and the seven stars. I know your works. You have the reputation of being alive, but you are dead. Wake up and strengthen what remains and is about to die, for I have not found your works complete in the sight of my God. So first part in verse 2, I want you to wake up. I want you to be vigilant, to pay attention. Verse 3, remember then what you received and heard, keep it and repent. If you will not wake up, if you won't pay attention, if you won't be on your toes, if you won't be alert, as it were, if you will not do these things, I will come like a thief, and you will not know at what hour I will come against you. So let's kind of start weaving these ideas together. When we think of being an encourager, perhaps in our mind's eye, we think of saying nice things to people. It's like, you know, I'm thinking about you. Or, how can I pray for you this week? Or, you know, we're keeping you in prayer, those sort of things. And that's encouraging. That's wonderful. That's at least a part of the conversation. But if we leave it there, we're never going to be the encouragement that we could be, or even that God really wants us to be, right? It has to go deeper than that. And I think one of the best analogies for a true source of encouragement is something like a sports coach. So think of track or football or basketball or soccer, whatever, you know, sport you find personally interesting. Is a coach only ever always going to tell you things that you want to hear? Not if he's a good coach, right? We think of some of the greatest coaches of our time. I think of Bill Belichick. I'm a Patriots fan. You can groan if you want to. I am not, however, a Crimson Tide fan, but Nick Saban, you can argue this all day long, he's one of the best coaches that we've ever seen. Is he just going to pull his players aside and say, you know what, I saw your effort today and that was really good. You dropped a few passes, but you'll get them next time. Not at all, right? He's a great coach. Admittedly, there's, you know, you can kind of tone him down a little bit, but all the same, the principle is there. If you're going to be an encourager, it's going to require a little bit more than only ever always saying nice, helpful, you know, polite things to people. And so let's kind of weave this into Ephesians chapter 4, verse 15. We speak the truth in love. So whatever we have to say is always gentle. It's always loving. It's always for the person's best interest at heart. But if I am diverting from the truth, if I am losing my way, if I am starting to leave the path of righteousness, and you come and encourage me, and you say, you're doing a great job, that's not what I need. That might be what I want to hear, but that doesn't do me any good, right? Encouragement is provocative. It rouses. It causes us to be vigilant. It encourages us to pay attention. We're on a battlefield, right? This isn't something that we're just casually doing as we have the time and opportunity. Our life is on the spiritual battlefield. We have to pay attention. We have to be vigilant. And so if we love each other as we should, then we're going to provoke each other. I wouldn't say the definition there is to to provoke or to irritate. I wouldn't say you go out and you be irritating, right? But we stir each other up. We spur each other on. If you've ever done any running, say if you've run a 5K or a half marathon, something that you'll notice is as you get closer to the finish line, the more encouragement you're getting from the people who are running beside you. I don't know if you've ever noticed that before, but you know, it feels like an eternity away from the finish line, and all of a sudden people beside you, and you're encouraging them and they're encouraging you. It's like, well, wait, I don't know you, but you're spurring me on. You are pushing me onto the finish line. You're hurting maybe just as much as I am. You're not having any more fun than I am, but you want me to finish the race, and I want you to finish the race, and so we're not going to let each other quit. You keep pushing. We're almost there. We've got 2 miles. We can do this, right? That's the idea that we're going for here. It's not always telling each other what is nice to hear, but telling each other what we ultimately need. And we'll get into that a little bit deeper in just a few moments. An analogy that I really like, Desmond Clark, he was an NFL tight end, and he kind of came to this crossing point in middle school, right? He reached a point at the end of one of his practices one day, and he wanted to quit. I don't want to play football anymore. I don't want to do this. And so he goes up to his coach. His coach is sitting in the station wagon, kind of loading up all of the material from that practice. And he tried to quit. He tried to tell his coach, I don't want to do this anymore, right? And the coach didn't let him quit. The coach said, well, no, I'm not going to let you quit. And he said specifically, I'm not going to let you be a quitter. That's exactly what we are for each other. We know that this life involves struggle. We know that this life involves heartache. And if you've never been tempted to walk away from the faith because it's a lot easier out there than it is in here, you probably haven't been a Christian for too long, or you're lying to yourself. Sometimes it's tempting to walk away because it's a lot easier out there than it is here, trying to do the right thing and holding ourselves to a standard. We as a family, what do? I'm not going to let you quit. I'm not going to let you walk away from the Lord. So it's not just telling each other what we want to hear, but ultimately what we need to hear. Oftentimes in this context, we quote Proverbs 27, iron sharpens iron. But iron sharpening iron isn't always a comfortable process, right? It involves friction. It involves some complications, and it's a difficult thing. Sometimes that's what we need. Sometimes that's what I need, and sometimes that's what you need. We need someone to come and tell us the hard truths, to push us on, to spur us on, always lovingly, always gently, but to push us on in the direction that we should go in. And we'll talk about that, that direction actually right now. Encouragement number 3 is profitable. It is profitable. The Hebrews writer says, let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works. So we don't just encourage each other for the sake of being an encouragement. We have people like that probably in our lives. They're just super nice. You know, they're always ready to spur you on and say, you know what, you're doing a great job, and we appreciate that. But in this context, we push each other in the right direction. It's not just to propel for the sake of propelling or encouraging for the sake of being an encouragement. We push each other in the right direction. And which direction do we push each other in? Go to Acts chapter 14. Acts chapter 14. Encouragement is profitable. The first idea that we can say, well, what is the profit? What is the fruit that is born of being an encouragement is like we've already mentioned, we keep each other faithful. We keep each other alert and paying attention. And this is what we find in Acts chapter 14, verses 21 and 22. When they had preached the gospel to that city and had made many disciples, they returned to Lystra and to Iconium and to Antioch, doing what? Strengthening the souls of the disciples, encouraging them to continue in the faith. Don't give up. Don't quit. I know it's tempting to quit. Of course it is. The Christian life is difficult. We should have known that before we were baptized, before we put our hand to the figurative plow, right? Before we started this Christian walk, we should have known that it's going to be difficult. But I'm not going to let you quit. I'm not going to stand here and watch you walk away from the Lord. And think about the beauty of that safety net that we have. In those moments when we're weak, in those moments when we're tired and stressed and life seems to throw us all of its problems all at once. I don't know if you've ever been there before. When it rains, it pours is sometimes the phrase that we use. When it's pouring in our lives, and it's a Wednesday night or it's a Sunday morning, and it's so tempting just to stay home and just to take it easy. And all of a sudden, of course, we take some time for ourselves. I'm not going to go to church today. And then all of a sudden, Wednesday nights turn into Sunday nights, and Sunday nights turn into Sunday morning Bible class, and Sunday morning Bible class comes to, I'll attend worship every couple of weeks, and all of a sudden, it's been a few months, and no one has seen us. What happened? The safety net failed, right? We failed because we saw someone beginning to compromise, beginning to walk away from the Lord, and we potentially, of course, we understand that they have free moral agency. They can do what they want to ultimately. But if no one ever goes to that person and says, listen, you're walking away from the Lord. You're beginning to compromise your faith. I know times are difficult, but I'm not going to let you quit. If we don't do that, we're not being an encourager. We're just telling people nice things that they want to hear. And those two ideas are different. Encouragement is profitable. Continue in the faith. Don't give up. I know you're tired. I know you want to give up, but don't give up. That's this first idea. If you're in Acts 14, go back one chapter to chapter 13 and verse 43. Chapter 13, verse 43. And after the meeting of the synagogue broke up, many Jews and devout converts to Judaism followed. That is chapter 13. It didn't sound right, and if you had questions, then I did as well. Chapter 14. Excuse me. It was chapter 13. I was making sure you were awake. It was chapter 13. It's okay. We got it. We're good. Acts chapter 13, verse 43. All right. Okay. Here we go. And after the meeting of the synagogue broke up, many Jews and devout converts to Judaism followed Paul and Barnabas, who, as they spoke with them, urged them to continue in the grace of God. Sometimes we think about a person who has just put on Christ in baptism. And they come up out of the water and they're zealous. They're on fire. They're so excited about their new Christian life, about the new standard that they're holding to, the new family that they find themselves in. But after that fire kind of dies down a little bit maybe, and not saying that it necessarily does, but if it does, if that fire tends to die down a little bit, and they all of a sudden the difficulties creep in as the adrenaline wears off, all of a sudden, it's very, very easy for them to go back, right? To fall back into the old ways of sin. We need to be there to say, you know what? You put your hand to the plow. You committed to this thing. You said that you were going to follow Jesus. And I'm going to make sure that I'm doing everything that I can to help you keep that commitment. And I need you to do the same for me, right? Okay. So continue in the faith. Continue in the grace of God. But then there's a level that's deeper than that. It goes beyond just helping each other stay faithful and making sure we're all attending worship services, right? Because that's not ultimately the mark of a faithful Christian. I can ride the pew for 50, 60, 70 years and at the end of my life still not be found faithful in God's service. So riding a pew isn't the sum total of Christianity here. We encourage each other not only to stay faithful, but then to go beyond that and to develop. To grow and to mature. And so, to love. We push each other to grow in our love. We push each other to grow in our good works. Ephesians 4:15 is, of course, a wonderful passage. But let's just look at Titus chapter 3. Titus chapter 3. Verse 8. Titus chapter 3 and verse 8. Paul says to Titus, the saying is trustworthy, and I want you to insist on these things, so that those who have believed in God may be careful to do what? To devote themselves to good works. These things are excellent, and here's our word, profitable for people. They're profitable. It's good that we do these things. It's the direction that we need to be moving in. So we encourage, but we encourage in the right direction. We push each other towards the ultimate goal. And think about it this way. What is God's ultimate desire for each one of us? It's to be saved. God wants us to be saved. If I'm a Christian, I'm following Jesus, right? I'm trying to be more and more like Jesus every day. That is my goal. That is our goal. Shouldn't my priorities line up with God's priorities? Doesn't that just make sense? Okay. So my priorities line up with God's priorities. God's priority is our salvation. And so not only do I want to keep myself in the faith, but I want to make sure that you stay in the faith too. Not only do I want to grow and develop, but I want to see you grow and develop too. Because there's no competition in the church, right? When you win, I win. And when you weep, I weep. Right? That's the principle that we find. When one of us weeps, we all weep. When one of us rejoices, we all rejoice. Encouragement is profitable. It's purposeful. It pushes us in the right direction. Point number four. Encouragement is proximate. Proximate. Let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, encouraging one another towards about the middle of verse 25, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another all the more as you see the day drawing near. Encouragement is proximate. And we can think about specifically Paul. Go back to Romans chapter 1. We read verses 11 and 12, but we're going to zoom out here and get a little bit more of the context. Romans chapter 1. If we want to develop as encouragers, if we want to improve in how we interact within our congregations, then it's going to involve us showing up. It's going to involve us being present, being active, actually participating, rather than doing so perhaps from afar. Look at what Paul says in Romans chapter 1, and we'll start in verse 9 here. Verse 9. For God is my witness, whom I serve with my spirit in the gospel of his Son, that without ceasing I mentioned you, always in my prayers, asking, now watch this, that somehow, by God's will, I may now at last succeed in coming to you. I want to see you. I want to see you. For I long to see you, that I may impart to you some spiritual gift to strengthen you. That is, we may be mutually encouraged by each other's faith, both yours and mine. I do not want you to be unaware, brothers, that I have often intended to come to you, but thus far have been prevented. What is on Paul's mind? I could write you letters all day long. And think about how convenient it would have been for Paul to rent out some office space in Philippi or Jerusalem somewhere and just write letters to congregations and send them in the snail mail. And think about how much longer his ministry probably would have lasted. It would have been a lot easier on him. I want to come see you. I want to encourage you, and I want you to encourage me. This writing letters thing is fine. It's good. It's important. But at the end of the day, I want to spend time with you. I want to be in your presence. I want you to be in my presence, because that's how we encourage each other. And this is usually when we go to Hebrews 10, 24, and 25. That's the reason that we come to this passage. Not neglecting to come together. And it's important. It's a very fundamental piece of this. We need to spend time together. We need to be in each other's homes. We need to be having dinner together. We need to be having coffee together. We need to be texting each other. Because for all the time that we spend out in the world with people who don't have priorities that line up with ours, and they're not pushing us in the direction that we're ultimately trying to move in, we need to balance that out with people who do want what is best for us. And that's people in this room. Right? People who have the same priorities, people who want to move in the same direction that we are trying to move into. We think about the first century church in Acts chapter 2, and think about the fire that they had. It's like, man, you know, I wish we could be more like the first century church. But what were they doing? They were spending time together. They were in each other's houses. They were talking about God's word, and they were building each other up. So if I limit the encouragement that I offer, and of course, we're not saying that coming to worship can't be encouraging, but that shouldn't be the sum total of the encouragement that I offer the congregation. It needs to extend beyond these four walls. How can I encourage throughout the week? How can I spur people on just in my day-to-day life? And sometimes that is a text message. Sometimes that is a letter, perhaps. Sometimes that is an email or a phone call or whatever the case is. But even more than that, we need to be spending time together. We need to be spending time together. So moving beyond this long-distance Christianity, there's a proximate idea here that we need to pursue. Finally, number five, encouragement is progressive. Progressive. The final phrase of verse 25, all the more as you see the day drawing near. You might be wondering, well, what day is he talking about? And you can get a relatively good sense of what he's talking about here, because all the more as you see the day drawing near. We know he's not talking about judgment day, because you're not going to see that day drawing near, right? That's the entire point of Jesus saying that he's going to come as a thief in the night. There's not going to be signs. There's not going to be any indicators that he's coming back. And so you go to Matthew chapter 24, and what do we have? The first part of that chapter, Jesus is talking about all of these signs that you can know that the destruction of Jerusalem is coming. It's on its way. These are the things that you can expect. I think it lines up very nicely with this is what that day is referring to. You see the day drawing near. How do you know that the day is drawing near? Jesus gave you all these signs, right? Jesus told you what to look for when that day was on the horizon, as it were. Okay, so with that in mind, all the more as you see the day approaching. Jerusalem is going to be destroyed. Based on what we know of the book of Hebrews, it's written to Jews. Things are about to get difficult. Things are going to be really bad for a while. Persecution is going to be increased. There's going to be fighting. There's going to be wars. People are going to lose their lives. You need to be an encouragement, but all the more as you see the day approaching. As things get worse in the world, as life gets more difficult for the New Testament Christian, we have to adapt. And so if I coast and I set the bar for my level of encouragement, and it doesn't pivot as the world gets worse, I'm kind of missing the point. Because the entire point of encouragement is how can I help other people stay faithful to God? But as life gets more difficult, the temptation to go away and to leave increases. So as things get more difficult, the more appealing it is to say, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. And the book of Hebrews was written to people who already wanted to leave. They were already looking at the exit door, wishing that they could go back perhaps to Judaism. Don't go back. Don't go back. We need to encourage each other, and all the more as we see the day approaching. That day there doesn't apply to us, but the principle does. As life gets more difficult, as things perhaps get worse, we need to respond and we need to adapt to help each other stay focused and faithful. Go to Romans 13. Go to Romans 13. I've got about 4 minutes. We'll look at one more passage and we'll do a quick summary. Romans 13, verses 11 and 12. Romans 13, 11 and 12. Paul says, besides this, you know the time that the hour has come for you to wake from sleep. There's that idea that we discussed. To wake from sleep. For salvation is nearer to us now than when we first believed. Think about it that way. Every day that we live is either, or really both, it's closer to the day of our death or to the Lord coming back and us hearing that trumpet in the first place, right? So each day that we finish, each day that we remain faithful, and I've finished this day and I have one more day to look forward to tomorrow, right? We're taking it one day at a time here. What is the point? You're one day closer. You're one day closer. Every day brings us one day closer. You were faithful today. Just be faithful tomorrow. Just take it one day at a time. And perhaps you've, going back to the old the running analogy, if you've ever been running, if you think about the 10, 12, 13 miles ahead of you, you're going to get disappointed and frustrated very quickly. This tenth of a mile, I'm going to do this tenth of a mile, and then we'll check back in and reevaluate, right? Sometimes you got to bring the scale all the way back to the next step. I'm going to take one more step and one more step. And that's what we do. Sometimes we have to take it one day at a time. Sometimes we have to take it 5 minutes at a time. I'm just going to be faithful. I'm just going to hold the line. I'm not going to give up. And we as a body, we adapt to the world outside by progressively increasing the amount of time that we're spending together and the amount of effort that we put into encouraging each other because we want each other to stay faithful. We want each other to stay faithful. So let's go back. Let's read Hebrews 10 one more time, and we'll have a closing prayer. Hebrews 10, 24 and 25. And let us consider, that is, encouragement is proactive, how to stir up one another. Encouragement is provocative. To love and good works, encouragement is profitable. Not neglecting to meet together, encouragement is proximate, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Encouragement is progressive. We want to develop. We want to improve. And across every area of our lives, we want to be better parents, better grandparents. We want to be better preachers, better elders, better deacons, better whatever is in our lives spiritually, we want to improve on. That should include our encouragement, the encouragement that we offer to other people. Because if the Lord returns, and when He does, if He finds us being an encouragement, it's not going to be an accident. It's not going to be something that, oh, well, what are the chances? I was a good encourager. It's going to be something that we decided to do and something that we developed in. I have no doubt in my mind, every one of us, if we went around the room and asked who is the greatest encouragement in your life, you could probably give someone. You could probably say, whether it be a person, you know, in the spiritual realm or in the physical realm, someone who encouraged you at a key moment of your life, and we think about that person. Like, man, they really helped me when I was in a dark spot. Let's aspire to be that person for someone else. Not for our glory, but because we want that person to stay faithful. And so when we see each other in heaven, then we can have that conversation and say, you know what? I was on the verge of giving up. I was on the verge of quitting and reneging on my commitment to Christ. But because of what you said, because of the time and the support that you gave me at the time that I needed it most, that's the reason that I'm here. Not for our glory, but for His glory, of course. Let's go and have a closing word of prayer.